Rifle Coffee, baby. Pretty cool.
What's up, guys? Today, we're going to do a bit of a different podcast. We're going to go through the Black River Coffee Shop. We're going to answer a bunch of questions that we put out on Instagram. If you don't follow us on Instagram, follow us on Instagram, because that's a lot where we get, or I guess put out for questions. So we're going to do an Evan Hafer Q&A sesh here today. So I'll show you guys around. So this shop here in Salt Lake is the first coffee shop that we built. This was 7 years ago. So I started the company in my garage. We're roasting 1 pound at a time with a little, it's called a fluid bed coffee roaster. So it's basically like a more complex popcorn popper. And I was building my website, roasting coffee, packing it, shipping it out, everything basically out of my garage in Salt Lake. We eventually moved into another location, which was, we were sharing space with Snowplow / like gardening company. And we worked in there for just about a year before we moved over, shared another space for about a year. I eventually landed here in Salt Lake at this building. And the way that that entire thing unfolded was we were growing so fast at the time, we kept needing more and more space. So I was moving just about every year to try to keep up with the demand for Black Rifle. I landed here and basically we went out, we searched for a bunch of buildings here in Salt Lake. We found this one. And why did we choose this one? Because it had easy access on the interstate and it was cheap. that's why we chose it here. It wasn't like we did map overlays and we hired, you know, commercial real estate consultants. We didn't have the money. So for the first 2 years of this business, one, I didn't take a paycheck. Matt didn't take a paycheck. JT didn't take a paycheck. We put all of the money that we had back into the company. And a lot of the questions that I basically answered, or at least I saw over the last couple of days, they were talking about business. How do I start this company? Or how do I start a company? So I'll just tell you just in general, the first 3 years before we got into this building. So we investing in the company and not having any capital because none of us had business experience. Myself, Matt, Jared, Logan. Logan had just gotten out of college. He was in the Marine Corps before that. We had another training business. We were doing like firearms and preparedness and things like that. Matt and Jared had Article 15 clothing. We combined those things and resources just about 2 years, 2.5 years into the company's existence. So that was just about 2016 and a half, give or take. But at the time, I didn't have any capital. I couldn't get any loans from Wells Fargo. I started the small business loaning process for veterans, and it was so complex that I not only was it too complex, it was really just a pain in the ass. So what I tried to do was basically sell everything that I owned, and that's what I did. So at that time, I had 10 years prior to that point deploying mostly to Iraq and Afghanistan. I'd been able to save up a little bit of money, and I was living in a 500 square foot house in Boulder, Colorado in 2014. My entire thought process was keep living like I was still an E6. So even though my income had increased, I was still living on the income of an E6. And I wasn't overspending. I was living within a budget. I was saving my money because I knew eventually I'd want to transition out and start something different. At the time in 2014, I was still working for the agency and in the National Guard here, 19th Special Forces Group in Salt Lake City, Utah. So I just had a baby. just got married, and I wanted to, what I was calling it, was emancipate myself from government service. I was looking to transition out, do something completely different. I had left the agency at the time with such a bad taste in my mouth, and you know, we could go into why. I don't blame other people for anything that I do. I don't, like, you know, forecast the things that I did. But I will tell you, I was burnt. You know, I did 43 individual rotations between the CIA and between special forces in the previous 14 years. So I was pretty fried. I was ready to transition out, get my own business, get something moving. My wife had, she had this coffee shop in Denver, Colorado, and I had been roasting coffee in 2004. I started roasting coffee 2005. I met a guy that was actually here in Salt Lake. He had a little 1 pound roaster, and I was fascinated by the fact that he had purchased this 1 pound coffee roaster. So I started roasting coffee to take with me on deployments. And he and I would compare notes. Eventually I would get better, but I was roasting coffee when I was home for 30, 45 days between deployments. I was taking it with me. This little espresso machine on my counter at my house, depending on where I was. And I would really focus on, I would buy 30, 40, 50, and sometimes 200 pounds of coffee. All of which wasn't that bad, but it still took quite a few repetitions of it. So I would roast up 40, 50 pounds of coffee. I would put it in a duffel bag. And this started around 2008, I would say, when I was proficient enough to take it with me. I'd take it with me. I would drink it on deployment or hand it out to other guys. There were guys that were deployed with me that were also into coffee. So V Diamond, if you're watching this, like, V was also into coffee. And he and I were flipping back and forth between Kabul around 2010. He lived here in Salt Lake. He was a former Navy SEAL. He works out in Hawaii now. But coffee had been a really consistent part of my life. It was something I really wanted to get into. It was actually something I wanted to do before the global war on terror. So this pesky global war on terror kept kind of delaying my entry into coffee. I met my wife. She had a coffee shop. She started talking more about the realities of you know, really just building a coffee shop. And the genesis of it was, what I wanted was, I wanted this really cool coffee shop / gun range gun store. So I wanted this, like, you know, leather chairs, cool floors, bougie. Because I, you know, when I say that, it's like, man, I love, like, race guns. And, you know, there's nothing better than, like, a Staccato or a Noveski, or when I say this, like, there's, like, really custom high-end Glocks that are just precision race guns. So for me, I thought, man, if I could combine those two things into something I call Black Rifle, roast coffee, have this range, I could eventually work to become what I would say is, like, free of government service and deployments. The first year, it was, I had two other jobs. I was still in the Guard, and I was working on an average of about 20 hours a day trying to just keep up. And I was still not keeping up. So the reality of it was, you know, I was missing rent payments. I had all of my inventory, everything was on my personal credit cards for the first 2 years. My wife really wasn't aware of a lot of the things that were happening financially, because I was trying to isolate my wife and my kids from the fear of what would happen if things went wrong. But I had really good business partners. I didn't have any money. So how do you solve the problem to start a business with good people and no money? That's basically where you roll up your sleeves and you go to work. And it was always something that I knew, if I just kept working at it, I would eventually get the reps in that I would need to either succeed in this business or another business. So I always looked at it as primary, alternate, contingency, and emergency, which is PACE plan for communications that I learned back in 2000 from the Special Forces qualification course. Come up with your course of action, come up with your course of action or your development, and then really start to prioritize against what will work, what do you want to do. And I wrote this mission statement as I transitioned in 2014, which was to emancipate myself from government service and live a happy and fulfilling life. That was it. My thing was I wanted to be home to raise my kids. I was tired. I was burnt out. I was a little bit cranky, maybe still a little bit cranky today. And this was the passion that I had for the product, which is coffee, and combining my desire to raise my kids, plug back into a community, see people every day that I get to meet and interact with, you know, that was a big motivating factor to me. I knew if I kept reinvesting in myself and the business, I would eventually get to the point where the company could pay my mortgage. It's long since past that, but it's my love and my passion for coffee is probably more today than it was 20 or 30 years ago. I know way more about coffee than I ever have. I continue to just find an immense amount of fascination in it and fulfillment. This shop is so special. It's so meaningful to me. The Salt Lake City coffee shop here that was the first real building that we purchased. And we had made enough money at the point where, you know, we could get into a bigger building. This is about 40,000 square feet. We still weren't taking any paychecks. So I was living off savings. I had sold basically everything that I owned. Matt and Jared were living in an Airbnb. Matt, Jared, and Logan were all living in an Airbnb downtown. And we pulled up into this shop in front of it, and I had a camper in the back of my truck, basically no money in the bank because of what we just purchased. And those guys were living in an Airbnb. We had essentially $0 to do anything at that point. But we knew we had a viable business, and we knew that if we kept working at it and reinvesting in it, eventually we'd be able to pay off the loan and or pay the building off. So we believed in ourselves, we believed in the team, we kept pushing. So this coffee shop is so meaningful for so many different reasons. So I look around, this was just the entry into an office building. It was, the receptionist desk was here, it was carpet. Jared Taylor and myself and Matt, we decided that we needed a place to receive Black Rifle Coffee customers. They came in through the front door. Collectively, between Jared and myself, Matt, we basically demoed the front of this, and we hired a really good guy that we knew. Well, hired is a loose term. We got a really good friend of ours that was still working for Nitro Circus, or at least worked for Nitro Circus in the past, to help us build this out because he was building ramps and things like that. So if you look around, the floor that we just ripped off and then stained the concrete, this is what I call spilt latte. I'll show it in the halls because it gets better. It's my attempt to make a floor that you could spill coffee on, it really wouldn't matter. But this comes directly out of my head in the iterative cycles of doing multiple floors over and over and over again. And you'll see it because you'll see the contrast between the offices. I got better at it. So when we walk out in the hall, actually let's walk out in the hall right now and show you from where it is now, which is not very good. It doesn't look like spilt latte. To here, it does look like spilt latte. And I was doing this in the basement of my house. So I was actually trying to design this from the basement of my house and in the shop. Eventually, my wife got to the point where she was like, dude, you can't restain the floors in our house anymore. You have to like take this outside. So we demoed this out. We built this place. And now we at least had some type of catcher's mitt for customers as they came in, because people were wanting to buy Black Rifle here. They didn't have any place to buy. They'd walk around to where the roaster is and back. So this retail spot was the first retail spot that we ever put in. It's very, very meaningful. This is pallet wood so we've got these pallet wood walls that we bought the stuff like at Home Depot or off Amazon. These lights are from IKEA. I drove these up in my Toyota Tacoma. The elk head here, and why is it even here? Because as you look at the wall wrap, you've got the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, Korea, Vietnam. And as it translates through, it goes all the way through. Actually, that's Revolutionary War, Civil War, the World War I, World War II, Vietnam. And then the Global War on Terror. So this elk was the elk that my dad shot here in the state of Utah about 4 years ago. It's the first hunt that we had been on in 20 years. So everything here has somewhat of a story. This wall is the history of, well, not all the wars, but some of the wars that's transcended as it transmits through time. The elk is the 20 years essentially that I missed in hunting and spending time with my dad because of the Global War on Terror. That's why it sits on the wall. That's why it's actually here. The floor that we built was for spilt latte. The black walls. So I used to paint, I still do actually, paint all these walls in basic chalkboard black. And the reason for that was I would paint these walls and then I would write in chalk very specific directives for individuals as far as like if this person's in ops or this person was in finance, however my org chart was broken down, I would come into their office and write stuff down. And then if I wanted to erase it, I'd just paint it over it. This espresso bar, some of this was put in by Wali Taslim. Wali Taslim was an Afghan commando that we worked with in Afghanistan that sought asylum here in the United States. We brought him back out to Salt Lake City, and he's been here with his family ever since with some other Afghan commandos. This is the third espresso machine that I've actually had back here. So if you look at what's here and why is it here, we've got these pour-over machines that are built on ratio for very specific coffees. I've got an AeroPress, Kiesvan, which is the espresso machine from an espresso machine standard. It's very manual, but it's high performance. It's one of my, what I would say is like my favorite looking espresso machines. It's absolutely a piece of art. The espresso that it makes, I'll just run one real fast for you guys. So for you that are, for all of everybody at home that's not listening to this, that's not watching this, that's listening to this, this is a much better show if you were to tune into the YouTube channel and check it out. When you're making a good espresso, you have to have essentially your, how many grams? Now, there's a few different variables that will affect a good espresso. And this is an old cup. Move that out of the way. You've got to tune it throughout the day. A lot of people don't quite understand this, nor do they care to understand it. But a really good espresso is not only roasted and or procured directly from the farm to be an espresso. It's roasted specifically for espresso, which could be straight or could be blended into an Americano. We have two different coffees and hoppers based on what people want. And then you're gonna have a couple different things that you can change in a green espresso, which is gonna be grind size, your water to coffee ratio, the temperature and pressure as it's moving through to essentially build the best espresso. But what people don't quite understand is this will actually change throughout the day and they have to recalibrate their grinder. And based on the outside humidity, maybe you've changed out beans, they've got a different moisture level as well. So we'll go check this espresso out. We'll see how it looks. You can come in, Heston. So you can see how this has this perfect espresso look. It actually looks a lot like the floor if you were to zoom in on that. And it's this perfect blend of very dark, almost tar color with a light tan from almost a milk to a caramel. And when you've done your job correctly, you have your timing and grain, your timing and weight associated with where you start on the coffee, where you end, and all these things are gonna be synced on a ratio. I'm not here to tell you what ratio you should use because there's different ones for different coffees. But what you really do have to understand is the way it looks. You can see what's called that crema on the top. It's absolutely a beautiful espresso. So these are 18 gram, 25 second shots. And this is one of my first coffees that I ever developed for espresso, which is called Silencer Smooth. It's still, to this day, it's still an incredible espresso. I'm not like patting myself on my back. I think it's gotten better every year. When I first started with it, I will honestly tell you it was horrible. I threw out a lot of coffees originally. So for those of you that are thinking about starting a garage or a home roasting setup with your espresso machine, you have to, one, go down the rabbit hole on this. There's a lot of different places that you can go out and get information, mainly on YouTube. YouTube's a great place to go find information on coffee and how to build a better espresso, how to roast it, whether you want a drum or a fluid bed, what's the difference? A fluid bed roaster is like a popcorn popper. A drum roaster is basically a big clothes dryer. So I'm simplifying that for the guys that are listening and watching so they don't, their eyes don't gloss over and start to want to check out of this episode because I'm going into the details of every aspect of roasting. If you want to do that, there's plenty of places on YouTube you can do that. My test on this stuff is not just on the weight and the time, it's the taste. So believe it or not, you know, you can calculate everything and try to hit it as close as you can. But if you're not getting the perfect espresso, you've got to reset your math formula and do it again until it starts to work. Not everything that you read is going to be able to plug and play because you've got a lot of different things that are going to affect your beans. One, to include altitude, humidity, how much moisture is in the beans. So these are things that you have to consider, but I will tell you right now, if you keep it simple, stupid, meaning keep a journal, write down your weights and ratios, and then start to look at the things that you can fluctuate and then replicate for perfection once you find it. That's all I'm going to say about it. This is a great espresso. Mm. So let's talk about some of these coffees. So Just Black. This Just Black was my first coffee that I ever roasted, that I nailed. And this bag is, I think, version 5 or 6 in just black. I actually pinned this profile, I would say 2008. And Just Black is named Just Black because every time I'd order coffee, I would say Just Black. They would ask you if you want cream or sugar, and I'd say, no, it's Just Black. So this is meant to be the perfect cup of drip coffee without cream and without sugar. It's a single origin Arabica. For the most part, I've gone with very specific beans from very, very distinct regions. At times I'll change them just based on crop and profile, meaning what's the taste, how does it come off that year. So the design in this Just Black means a lot, which is you have the camouflage in the background, which is Mac V SOG Tiger Stripe camouflage. It's a Special Forces lineage that traces back to Vietnam. You have a diner mug, and it's in the eagle's left claw. And that diner mug was this mug that I stole from Denny's in 2005, and it had a big crack down the side of it. And I carried it everywhere I went for years. It became kind of like a good luck charm for me. And I packed it all the way until much after I started Black Rifle. I eventually lost it on a hunting trip. But you have a coffee plant next to the coffee mug. This is the eagle from the POTUS seal, which is the president of the United States. The AR, but this is actually the service rifle, an SBR service rifle that I used back in 2012. So before I started the company, this was an SBR by a very specific manufacturer. And it's a suppressed short-barreled rifle that I carried every day. So the entire package is, you know, I'm a Green Beret, of course, you know, I'm a Green Beret. The coffee mug that I carried for years, the coffee, and it's telling why the POTUS. The POTUS is the commander-in-chief. So for me, all these things tie together. Just Black being the perfect cup of coffee, the cup of coffee that you could have every day, no cream, no sugar. That's why I built this. That's why the design looks the way it does. And that's why it kind of stays. And every design, from my perspective, has to tell a story of some kind to tie back to typically my history or Matt's or Jared's. The Silencer Smooth is an actual blueprint of a suppressor, and it's meant to be a quieter cup of coffee. So this one, the Just Black is meant to be a medium. This is meant to be a quieter, lighter cup of coffee, but it can also be run as an espresso. And then with this blueprint, I've got a thumbprint on it, a coffee stain with my initials. Matt's got his initials, and Jared has his initials on the blueprint itself. From the genesis of where we were in 2014 to where we are today, the company looks a lot different than where it did in my garage. But there's a lot of things that are the same, and if not amplified, amplified in several different ways, good and bad, depending, right? We've gotten... I think one of the this was one of the questions, you know, what do you like the most about the company? And I think one, coffee, right? So first and foremost, I'm a coffee guy and I love coffee. Two, it's the impact on the community. So the impact that we make on the lives of our brothers and sisters in the veteran community every day. So now I get to plug in on two very distinctly different things, which is coffee, which translates internationally. Can come in from South America, you know, Southeast Asia, Hawaii, wherever the coffee's coming in, but it's also served internationally in multiple different ways. So you can interact with this multidimensional product and have a direct impact not only in your life, but in the people's lives that you care about, which I think it's no secret. I have a very distinct, what I feel is moral obligation to the veteran community. And I think that that is a good segue to say, well, why did you take the company public, for instance? I get that one a lot. This was on the questions that we put out. And the main driving factor to taking the company public was to inspire an entire generation of warfighters to go out and start businesses. So my thing is, you know, if a knuckle dragger, former enlisted SF guy can start a company in his garage after he, you know, gets out and transitions into civilian world, not transitions, as some of you might be thinking, but you transition out, you start a business in your garage, and in 9 years, you know, we could be on the New York Stock Exchange. Well, I'm not saying that's for everybody, but it's something that can inspire an entire subculture of veterans. And what I feel it's so passionate about is the Global War on Terror, the GWAT veterans, they have to have people that have done things first, because they have to have these direct set examples to going out saying, well, that dumb fuck did it, so I can do it too. And I'm more than happy to go out and do those things to set an example. And I don't really give a shit how painful it is, because it is a very specific ethical and moral obligation that I have to give back to the community by not only building what I feel is a great company, but also being able to go out, lead by example, do things that are very difficult, challenging, sometimes questioning like why the fuck I do them to begin with. But the reason I do them is not because it was worth the financial, because it wasn't like me individually and financially, I didn't directly benefit from that. But it did inspire thousands of other veterans to just say, you know what, I can go do something like that. I can go start a business. And I feel with the amount of psychological and physical stress that the community is under, we as a collective whole GWAT community, we've got to go out and do things that are very difficult, put ourselves in the public eye, and then set a standard so other men and women can go, I'm going to go do that because it doesn't look that hard. I'm telling you, from my personal experience, I've done several hard things. And running this business for the last 10 years, now being, you know, the executive chair of the company, it is the single most difficult thing I've ever done in my life. It not even comparing it to other things. So I don't mean to go out and say, hey, this is easy. What I mean to go out and say with my actions is go out and say, hey, you can do this, but be prepared to suffer and be prepared to, when you step into the fray of this and you feel like you don't have another step to take, you have to be prepared to take 100 more. It will wear you down to a point of exhaustion that you didn't think you were physically or mentally capable of doing. But it's worth it. And when I say that, when you put out a challenge to yourself and you go out and you accomplish it, and you do that with other people, and you see the direct benefit in their lives that you can make, it becomes an absolute gift back to your soul. And that's my job. When I say that, it's like, I don't do this so I can like fly around in fucking private jets and act like one of these fucking loser idiots that are talking about the grind all the time, driving, you know, Lamborghinis. That's for guys that want to look the part. Like, I do this so I can hire people and give back the community and put my kids into good schools. So if you think that this is going to be a shortcut to what I would say is individual wealth, the glitz and glamour, you're not going to survive. Like, you have to have the depth in the values inside if you're going to start a business, to step forward into the fray, sacrifice everything you know about yourself, be prepared to sacrifice everything you have, and then reinvest in the things that you truly believe in order to be a success. Meaning I've reinvest in these concentric circles of investments, which is invest in my family, my company, my community, in that order. So if you notice, like, I'm not in that. I'm the last guy on that totem pole. So when you find ways that you can invest in not only that, do that, but then reinvest your time, that's what you have to do. Because people say, and I've heard this, like, this Pinterest bullshit that people spin out where they're like, find something you love and you'll never work another day in your life. Yeah, that's great. Find something that you love so much that you don't feel like you can take another step and you can't take another step. But that's the thing that puts you up the fucking hill for another mile. And I'm not a motivational speaker. I'm never going to be one. I'm not going to, like, go out and try to stump guys for that type of thing. I'm just giving you the painful reality of what it is. The life of an entrepreneur is extremely difficult. It will challenge you in ways that you've never been challenged before in your life. And you have to be prepared to not only fail, but then pick yourself up over and over and over again, and then believe in yourself enough to succeed. So that's like my business startup, Evan, you know, advice. And then where are we going? Because I got that one too. And why do we take the company public? Where are we going? We're still going to the same spot. And what I like to tell guys when they ask me, like, where are we at? You know, where are we at on hiring 10,000 vets? Well, the economy changed. And when I say this, it's not even meant to be an excuse. It's, we went from high growth, low interest rates, to now the economy has pivoted away from e-commerce into, people are still, they want to go and have a shopping experience. So where the company has to go in order to be a company that's going to be around for 100 years is you have to be able to pivot into profit, meaning you have to be profitable to define your own destiny over the course of the next 100 years. So I'm building a legacy that will be around well after I'm gone. I'm not concerned about this year or next year as far as reaching the 10,000 veteran mark. I'm concerned with, how do we build a process in an institution that can hire tens of thousands of veterans over the course of the next 100 years. So we're still headed to the same spot. We're closer than we ever have been as far as being able to go out, make a direct impact in the community, not only hire people, but also give back to philanthropic endeavors that we believe in that directly plug into the veteran community. But it's never not front and center for us. Like, it's always there. It runs in the background like software. It just continues to run like software. So we're still headed in that direction. I think we're in a better spot today than we ever have been. They asked me, you know, do I regret taking the company public? It's more difficult. It's a challenge to be a public company for sure. But it's also something I think we had to do, because we have to not only prove that we can go out and run the company in a very transparent and authentic way and still succeed, but we have to be able to bring out our customers and pull them in to being part of this process. I think it would be one thing if we were private, but, you know, you wouldn't be able to read quarterly reports. You know, the guy that's transitioning out as a E6, E7, or E9, or 03 to 06, he won't be able to hear my voice talk about my earnings reports, and my errors and my successes wouldn't be directly out there for people to use as after action reports. These are meant to be after action reports for the veteran community so they can learn and go out and institute them either in their transition or their own businesses. So it's one of the reasons why we have to do it. It's one of the reasons why it's really important. I'm fine with taking on that type of thing because I feel like it's not what you want to do, it's what you have to do. And I'm duty bound in the context of, I understand my subculture and I understand they're going through a lot of what I would say is physical and psychological. They have a lot of physical and psychological issues. Guys from the community and the special operations community, from the intelligence community, from the military community and veteran community, they're dealing with a whole other subset of issues, mainly about getting out, right? So they have a loss, a disconnectivity from their tribe. They're transitioning out of profession, maybe because of a physical injury, or maybe just because they're transitioning out. And because of that, they've been completely immersed into a tribe that's cultural indoctrination. Now they're out and they're alone. And now they have to find their way in the world without these group of people that have been protecting them, and they've been working together maybe for years, and then reps. Not only those reps might be within physical and psychologically hard endeavors, this could be galvanized through repetitions of combat. And now they're out and they're planted into a civilian world that might not make sense to them anymore. And it doesn't make sense, right? So for a lot of us, it doesn't make sense. I'll tell you why. Because you start to hear the narrative and what people care about, right? So, you know, they're talking about they have 1,000 pronouns and they want to identify as a fucking cat or whatever stupid thing that people are thinking about that day. That becomes their plight of Job because they've never done anything difficult in their lives. And when you're talking about the fact that you think that you're a garden gnome or a hairless fucking cat to the guy that lost his legs 3 years ago, it's not significant and it's somewhat meaningless. And it's frustrating for a group of people that could have been deployed multiple times and exchanging gunfire with the enemy to come back and have this drivel that people want to discuss. And it's not only frustrating, it becomes a point of anger. And that's why I think all of us as a veteran community, if guys are starting businesses, they build their own cultures. They start to build their ecosystems around things that we care about. And we don't have to have that shit. We don't have to talk about this stuff because it's stupid and it's nonsense and we don't want to. We can talk about how do we build successful and good businesses, plug back into our communities and directly contribute to the things that we care about without pretending to care about useless, trite horseshit, right? So for me, I think it's really important for guys to go out and start businesses because it's this momentum factor, this flywheel effect. If you start a business, you hire people, you build a culture around your success criteria, you plug back in with your profits directly into your community, and you have a direct impact into the people that you live next to, left and right. And then you can have a direct impact into your veteran community. So as I start to think about veterans specifically and veteran issues and how do I help solve them, like this is it, right? This is, you have to lead by example. And I think that that's been a very specific challenge and it's something I feel that is my duty. So I don't think most people quite understand that, where they think, well, this is just a lot of fun and you get to run the company. And it's like, no, this is my duty. Like I am duty bound to continue to drive the company so it can be a success and an example for other people. And it will directly impact the success of our subculture, the people that are directly under pressure that I care about. So we just went through and we talked about why Black Rifle, why did it go public? I think there's a combination of things that we could also talk about, but I also wanted to get you into seeing the other pieces of the shop. So we'll get out and we'll not only talk about other pieces that I think are important, but how do you build a culture within a company around around what I would say is premium product set that showcases passion. Let's go do it. We're talking about the company and we're talking about, a lot of these things and why do I do them? What's it all about? Sometimes I don't know, but I can tell you very, very specific examples as to things that we built for a purpose, which would be this is something I built and I designed this several years ago. It's called the Perfect Mug. And the reason I built it, the way that I built it, there's so many different reasons. So one, the color, it's a light color, which is almost a off-white. And the reason for that is because I want to be able to look down through the coffee and see how dark or how light it is. And from that look, I can also gauge, did I go too heavy or did I go too light with my coffee ratios? It's also built so on a 1:16 ratio through a Hario V60 pour over or a Chemex, I can put 30 grams in and it's 480 grams out. So it actually fills up to just about a half of an inch below the top, which I also don't believe in filling coffee all the way up to the edge because there's nothing more ridiculous than spilling, scalding hot lava all over your genitalia. It's the fucking worst. So for me, this is, an off-white, it's 30 grams in, 480 grams out. It's three fingers, so you can put three fingers in the mug. It's got a thumb rest on the top. It has enough weight and heft that you can hit an attacker in the face if you need to defend yourself, which is also another important factor into defining how you select product. And then on the bottom, it has that same Just Black logo. So for me, this is the perfect coffee mug. I've designed probably a half a dozen coffee mugs. I spent a couple months working with, I think they're a ceramicist, maybe, I don't know, potter, whatever it is. Just trying to come up with this, and this is my version of the perfect coffee mug. This was one of the questions that I got yesterday was, where do you source mugs or whatever? I'm like, well, if you want to know what I'm drinking out of, this is what I drink out of every morning. The other thing that I got was what is your carry? What is your carry that you carry every day? So this is a 365 or a SIG 365 with an extended magazine, standard SIG optic, a flashlight. So that's my everyday carry. It's a 365. So this is a SIG 365 with an extended magazine, a flashlight, and a red dot. And then I had the guy do it in woodland camouflage. But the combination of things is, one, you shouldn't carry an EDC that doesn't have a flashlight on it because there's not too many scenarios that I've encountered where a small flashlight doesn't at least come in handy, and or if you do need it, chances are it might be at night. So it is a consideration that you need to have. Anytime you need to use one bullet, you probably need to use four, just saying. Having an additional mag capacity becomes important, but by far, I switched out. I was a Glock guy for years. I switched to this a couple years ago when they came out. It's just a better shooting pistol. It's a metal trigger. metal frame, shoots flatter, doesn't have as much flip. It's a fantastic EDC. I carry it pretty much every day in the Glover's Field Craft Survival Fanny. So that's my EDC. My perfect EDC coffee mug, my perfect EDC pistol. Let's go in here. When you look around Black Rifle, especially Salt Lake, you're gonna see a lot of different things here that are very specific to the company and what we believe in. So there's this narrative, right? It's like, okay, and you've seen it, I've seen it, everybody's seen it, which is, you know, we as a company donate to political causes. We don't. We've had over 1,000 employees. We don't determine what party they go to, which party they donate to, but we do build a culture around love for country, service, and what primarily is called Black Rifle Coffee. So for us, we have to believe in the fiber of America, the Constitution. So this whole, like, this whole narrative that's kind of constructed and pushed out there is built mainly by people that broker in what I call toxic fuel. And I don't do this typically, which is I don't broker in it. Toxic fuel will only sink people over the long run. The community that we built and the people I care about, they don't need to get invested in drama. They don't need to get invested in toxic fuel. We only push positive. If you're listening to the podcast, you're going to hear me address it once and maybe in a few different conversations, but we don't do this on a regular cycle because it's not worth it. We believe in America. I believe in the Constitution. I believe that we collectively can overcome our differences and essentially solve any problem that's been given. But when we start to lose faith in the country, that becomes an issue for me. So when we look at this on the walls, we've got, this is Washington accepting the surrender. This is the signing of the Declaration of Independence. Here's the Constitution. And all of this stuff is put on our walls to point back at how the founding fathers built something extremely important that we should constantly be reminded of. This is navy gray. It's the same gray. So if you're listening, it's the same gray that Navy ships are painted throughout the entire inventory. It's like if you're a Navy guy, you'll understand it. Here's Charles. He's fucking walking back here. We got lots of different things. Cool. Yeah. It's great. If you're listening at home, so I'm walking into my conference room now, and the conference room is literally where we've held most of the planning sessions around Black Rifle Coffee. Our executive team, other teams, everybody still meets here regularly. But there's a reminder on the wall, which is, it's a painting of Washington crossing the Delaware. So when you walk through the halls of Black Rifle Coffee and you get a sense as to how important, how meaningful, how emotionally connected we are to the fiber of our country, you can't help but not only be reminded of the great people that sacrificed so much to get us where we are, but it's also what we can do for our communities, what we can do for the veteran community in general. We're headed into the coffee lab now. So the coffee lab is where Edwin Parnell, some of you have seen Ed in our content, you've seen him on YouTube and some of the other, not only skits, but also in some of the instructionals that we put out. The coffee lab here, we have the espresso machine that sits in most of our drive-thrus and in a lot of our coffee shops. We have sample roasters back here. So we've got small, medium, large, from what I would say is a minor level of sophistication to a really, really sophisticated sample roaster. We have samples down below, and green coffee comes in samples that look like this. So this is what coffee looks like before it's roasted. They come in from different farms and or brokers. We roast to what we feel is probably the most desirable roast specifications based on where it comes from and the type of bean it is. And then we push it through a combination of brew types. So you roast it, you let it off gas for at a minimum of 24 hours. Then you put it through a pour over device, an espresso machine. You might put it through a combination of things just to see what it tastes like. So we have multiple different pour over devices, which you not only can look at these and say, well, they all kind of look the same, but they're all kind of gravity brewers, for lack of a better term. Most people don't have the palate or the tasting, an intelligent tongue, we'll call it, right? So they don't have the ability to clearly differentiate between flavors in a coffee. If you come over here, we have what's called a flavor wheel. So the taster's flavor wheel. So for coffee, especially great coffees, you'll be able to pick up all these different types of tasting notes, roughly twice as many as wine. And our job as coffee roasters is to take not only incredible coffee from Guatemala, Nicaragua, El Salvador, Vietnam, or Thailand, or wherever it comes in from, but it's to match the great coffee that comes in, to match it with the perfect roast. So apply heat and time, a few other variables to it, to create something that is exceptional. So really what I say is, like, what you have to do is you have to take a coffee bean and then you roast it to its full capability. It's almost like raising kids, right? You have to, your job as parents is to, well, I mean, I'm not going to tell you what your job is, but my job is to essentially raise and then facilitate somebody rising to their most potential. Same thing with coffee. You know, we've got other things in here too, but brew devices, coffee. So upstairs at the top, I've got Bill Murray at the top of the stairs. Combination art. This was my first elk that I shot with my bow hanging here. These paintings are from a guy named Chuck Podwell, who is the original artist for Rambo First Blood, which ultimately decided why I did what I did in my life. So if you look around, you'll say, what do we have in here? You've got pictures of the SAS Desert Rats. You've got paintings from guys that have sent them in that have painted, literally paintings with coffee. And then recruiting, World War II recruiting posters, Ernest Hemingway. It's kind of a collage of things that have impacted my brain in very specific ways. So Bill Murray, because I love Bill Murray. Podwell paintings because of Rambo First Blood. An elk rack, which there's multiple throughout the entire company. Recruiting posters and people that have inspired me. Up here is where we used to do our podcast. And now it's just a place for, I guess, Heston to hang his camera lens or something. Let's go out to the gym. So we talked a little bit about community, culture, building culture around a company. And part of this whole thing with Black Rifle and then understanding where we live in Salt Lake and the things that we built. So I built this gym back here several years ago with Sorenex and Softly. So Brent Phillips from Softleet, who's just on the podcast. Bert hasn't been on the podcast yet, but someday. So guys can come back here before or after on the weekends, work out, clear their heads, get back to work. The other piece is, why do we go so hard into archery? And there's one simple fact. It's an active form of meditation. It's quiet. You can shoot them about anywhere. You can go out and participate in a hunt. And even if you're physically injured, you can still go out, maybe kill an animal and provide food back to your family. So it's a reinforcing mechanism around back here for us to not only emphasize fitness, but then you have archery that anybody from the company can get involved in. Not only helps you clear your head, plug in, get an active form of meditation, but it can also directly benefit you and your family in a way that you're providing food, putting it back on your table. You also get to transition maybe out of the mill and then find a different subculture that wants to go out and, you know, shoot foam targets at the Total Archery Challenge, or go out into the mountains and hunt deer or elk, or just go out and fucking hike with your bow in your hand. But at the end of the day, really what this entire thing is about, it's about trying to successfully transition out of government service, find another tribe, or build your own. So for me, I've been able to do what I would say is I've been able to do that relatively well. And I don't often talk about it because I don't want it to ever come off like I'm some type of like, you know, entrepreneurial, like, you know, grind hard or whatever kind of guy that is. My thing is run the company, plug in, be a good dad, be a good business owner, be a good veteran in the context of plug back into my community and give back and not talk about it. But I do have to do more of this because I know that it's very beneficial. And then just based on the amount of questions that we got on this round, I figured this would be a very good entry for us to at least have these every couple months, where we have these open conversations about the things you guys want to talk about. Once again, I will remind you guys, submit your comments below and you'll receive a perfect coffee mug for this episode. So comment below, Heston will send it out to you. You'll get a personal letter from me. I love you guys. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Like, subscribe, share, do all of that. Thank you so much.